Do you live in the middle of nowhere and feel separated from the church?
Yeah, that's me.
Or do you think the church is out of touch?
Absolutely.
Then this podcast is for you. Coming to you from the Diocese of Sioux City.
What? Where the hell is Sioux City?
Welcome to Outcast Catholic with your hosts, Father Shane Demon and Father Travis Crotty.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Outcast Catholic. I'm Father Travis Crotty.
And I'm Father Shane Demon.
And it's good to be back with you, Father Shane. We had an episode there where I wasn't able to join you.
Yes, and we did.
And you might not be able to join us on this one with that
cough. I know, if I don't get my coughing under attack, my spring allergies have just exploded here in St. Louis. But it's good to be back with you. Yes, we did an episode recently with Patty Schneier and here in St. Louis, and it was good to have her on. And it's really good, Father, that you're running the intro music and the outro music today. I'm just going to turn that over to you.
I like to listen to our show sometimes. It might seem kind of odd that like I'm listening to our own shows, but it's just kind of nice to remember what we talked about and when other people bring up different episodes. However, I was excited to listen to, you know, the one with Monsignor Shea and then this one with Patty Schneier. Father Shane, as you mentioned on the episode, Patty's son is a priest, Father John Schneier, and we actually did ministry together my deacon year. So, yeah, it was exciting. I hadn't actually met Patty before. However, toward the end of the episode, I was listening, and I was excited about the episode. It was a wonderful episode. And toward the end, when Patty was kind of wrapping up, there was an odd laugh track that kind of came on unexpectedly. This particular sound effect started playing while she was wrapping it up, and I thought, that's unlike Father Shane. It's kind of a little serious here, and I thought, maybe he was trying to
fitting the tone here.
Maybe he was trying to go with the applause button or not. And then I realized, oh no, he was going for the outro music, and it
just trying to wrap it up and hit the wrong button. So
it hit the wrong button, and then I thought, oh well, Father Shane will probably, you know, he knows what his mistake was, and he'll hit the outro music, and then he just messed up one time and just ended the episode just like that. Boom.
So for our listeners, the equipment that I have here, the sound clip bites are not in the same order as on the equipment in Sioux City. And it was confusing. And I was just in the zone with Patty and we were talking about her great conversion and the technology got the best of me at that moment. But we just cut it off.
It's great because our listeners know that Father Shane, you know, you kind of got this equipment first and then learned the equipment and then invited me onto the show. When we started the podcast in 2020 during the COVID shutdown and everything else. So you kind of like did the research and you know everything and you had the card. We have this card here that tells you what the sound effects are. And you're more of a sound effect guy than me because I haven't really like taken the time to learn the sound effects. So I'm kind of slow to the draw and you're pretty quick to the draw. You got the sound effects right in front of you kind of going strong. And so it's just funny that, you know, you are the sound effect man. And then, you know, when it hit this time,
it flopped.
You know, you talk about
the episode did flop, but the sound effects clearly did.
Just to, you know, as all Midwesterners do, talk about the weather as we, you know, kind of must do all the time. You know, while the pollen is in the air already in St. Louis, I don't know if you realize that this week when we're recording, Monday of this week, so it's February 29th today, and Monday of this week, it was 70 degrees outside. And I walked around downtown, went and got a coffee on my day off, had a nice stroll around downtown Sioux City, enjoying the sights. I mean, it took a couple-hour walk. It was wonderful around downtown. And 2 days later, it was 7 degrees in the morning.
Yeah, and you had snow, right?
Yeah, we had snow. And I drove back into Sioux City after a clergy day from Storm Lake. And the same downtown that I had been walking around in 70-degree weather was like a whiteout. It was just like a complete, like blowing snow. And I thought, people often talk about how, you know, the seasons change and sure, everywhere else in the Midwest, seasons change. But I'm like, this is something different. Going from 70 to 7 degrees in 2 days is kind of wild. And then we're back up to 65 today. So here we are.
Wow. Whiplash.
Whiplash is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're tough and hardy.
I walked around downtown Sioux City because a couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go to New York City and walk around Manhattan a little bit. I went for a conference. The New York Encounter is the annual kind of cultural event hosted in the United States by Communion and Liberation, that movement in the church I've talked about before. And it was a wonderful opportunity to see different presenters and things that range from, you know, they had a journalist from Jerusalem who interviewed the pastor in Gaza, talked to the patriarch of the Holy Land, right, Pete Zabala. And then also, you know, a presentation on Simone Weil and her life. So it just kind of, and then also a presentation on, you know, Armenia and the issues they've had there. So this rich kind of cultural experience that helps us focus on Christ more fully. So it was wonderful. However, on Monday, our flight wasn't until the afternoon. So I took an opportunity to have a touristy day in New York, which I'd never had before. I've only visited twice, and both for this conference, and both times has been kind of, you know, just around the neighborhood. Yeah. And what I loved as an extrovert that I am, walking around the streets of Manhattan, popping into the deli, grabbing a bagel and a cup of coffee. I love that kind of stuff, right? And just the humanity, I love that. But I hadn't got a chance to see a lot of the stuff. So this year on Friday of that weekend, we were able to go visit St. Patrick's Cathedral, which was wonderful to be able to see that beautiful church that's so iconic, Rockefeller Center across the street. That was awesome. However, on Monday morning, my friend and I had some free time. And I said, I really want to see the Statue of Liberty. I've never seen it. I'd love to see it. So we did our research and we found that free Staten Island ferry. That's just a free transit just across the harbor there. So we got on that and we thought there was a mass in the hotel, stayed in this Catholic hotel, which is kind of neat in New York City, but wasn't a mass. So we're hitting the streets at like 7:30 in the morning with a ton of time. So we rode that ferry. Not a lot of people wanting to go to Staten Island on, I think it was President's Day on Monday. So the ride over, there was like five people on this ferry. And it was moving, way more moving than I expected to see the Statue of Liberty, but then especially Ellis Island right there. And to recognize while we're on that ferry that all of my ancestors from Germany, Ireland, Switzerland would have all come through Ellis Island when they immigrated, right, in the 1800s, or at least most of them. So it was exciting to realize, wow, okay, I actually have a history here. My country has a history here. And I don't feel particularly patriotic most of the time. I know a lot of people do, but especially with just political kind of strife over the years, especially since I've been an adult, there's just been a lot of growing political strife. So it's just not easy to be very patriotic. But then seeing the Statue of Liberty and seeing Ellis Island reminded me why I love being from the United States and I love my country, and seeing New York from the water like that. It's striking. And to realize that, yeah, people came from all over the world to this land of freedom, and we're still living in that, right? And we get to express and experience our Catholic faith, even doing things like this with this freedom of speech here. But then as we came back and we kind of goofed around in Staten Island, funny enough, I was expecting kind of like Staten Island to be a lot like Manhattan and just like more of the city. And we get off and it just kind of felt like downtown Sioux City where you get off on the ferry. It was just kind of like federal buildings and kind of, you know, bombed out cars and stuff. So I kind of felt like a little taste of home there and kind of
welcome home.
St. George, Staten Island right there. Yeah, that's kind of funny. But we're going back and we noticed on the way down that the subway line we were on went right under the World Trade Center. Father Shane, you're a little bit older than me. And you know, you probably remember September 11th, 2001 more vividly than I do, but I was in third grade. So when we realized we had lots of free time with it, why wouldn't we stop and sort of experience the memorial and stop there? So I was just like feeling this kind of patriotism kind of welling up in me, seeing the Statue of Liberty, seeing Ellis Island right there. But then to stop at the World Trade Center, so I was in third grade when that terrorist attack happened, and I was in Our Lady of Good Counsel in Fonda, Iowa, and I remember they brought in the TVs and they turned on the news, and we all went over to the church and we all prayed, and it was this kind of confusion, but that has marked my life from being a young person. I mean, everything has changed as far as, you know, air travel goes, as far as, you know, security, the wars that continue, right? I mean, that was kind of this big watershed moment for our country. And I remember that. And so walking up to the memorial was impressive and impactful for me. And if anybody has been there or seen the memorial, a picture of that on TV or online, the kind of footprint of the Twin Towers has been left empty. And there's kind of like a super deep swimming pool, right? And then kind of this reflecting pool. And then the middle of it's even deeper. You don't get to see the bottom. That's where the water kind of goes. And then along the railing are all of the names of the victims, who were in the Twin Tower, who were in the different flights, who perished in that awful attack. So it was impressive. And we prayed there, my friend and I. But then also right next to it is the new World Trade Center, One World Trade Center. And there was this, again, this patriotism that kind of welled up in me of, yes, we're going to recognize and leave this huge block in New York City, downtown New York City, some prime real estate. We're going to leave it empty, but then have an even bigger tower right next to it. Like, nobody keeps us down. Like, we're going to come right back, which was impressive. But then we walked around to the other side, and some people have probably seen this on the news, but just across the street from one of the towers, across the street, on the other side of where the big one is now, I noticed this very odd and unique building. It was this little tiny white building, this marble building. I thought, that's got to be something connected with this memorial, but I don't know what it is. Well, then I noticed it had a dome and it had a cross on the top, and I thought, oh, that's an Orthodox church. Okay, this is interesting. Let's go check it out. It looks new. It looks interesting. Let's go look. So you have to walk up onto the kind of the campus, and the front door is kind of around the backside. We walked in, we realized that, oh, okay, this was a former Orthodox church that was right across the street in kind of an old, like, apartment building that came down on that same day. And it was just finished last year. So I don't know if you've seen any pictures of that, Father Shane, but it's
I haven't. I've been to the, you know, 9/11 site, but I have not seen this new church. It's been a couple of years since I've been out there.
Yeah, and I did a little research afterwards, and they started construction. They broke ground in this new location for the church in 2015. Mm. And through lots of difficulties with, like, finances and things like that, they finally finished it. So as you can imagine, if you rebuild something there, I mean, they built it, like, out of, you know, reinforced cement, and it's, like, you know, bomb-proof and all this stuff. But it's covered in marble, in this Greek marble. But then on the inside, the dome doesn't have any windows. But the dome has certain parts of it that are translucent and lets light through. So we walk in, and, I mean, filled with kind of classic Greek iconography. Beautiful, brand-new icons. Marble all over the inside. Very small little chapel. And I was explaining to my friend some of the different aspects of iconography, and so much of Byzantine iconography is very classic. I mean, it's like all the same icons are in every church. Well, the first thing we noticed is the panitera, or the icon of Mary behind the apse, or in the apse, rather, behind the altar. It was Mary of holy protection. She's kind of holding this mantle. And then underneath the mantle was kind of a painting of downtown New York City, which was special. Okay. Well, my friend, I'm pointing out different icons of the crucifixion, the life of St. Nicholas. It was St. Nicholas's church. And then my friend points out that there's an icon of the Nativity, and she says, oh, I've never seen the cave of the Nativity. I'm explaining, oh, yeah, of course, that's the classic icon from the east of what the Nativity of Christ is. And right below that was the icon of the Resurrection. And if anybody hasn't seen, in the west, we often picture Jesus kind of in white standing above his tomb. But in the east, it's beautiful. It's more so a depiction of Holy Saturday, of his descent into hell. And Christ, dressed in white, kind of resurrected from the dead, is pulling two people out of their tombs. My friend said, well, who are those people? I said, well, what do you think? Kind of going through, and she said, well, Moses. I said, no, even older, Adam and Eve. So it's beautiful. It's the new Adam and Christ pulling the old Adam and Eve out of the tombs. And in a classic icon of the resurrection, you also have a few people kind of standing next to Christ. And those are usually King David, King Solomon, John the Baptist, who was, of course, martyred, beheaded, and then a couple other patriarchs who are awaiting the resurrection. Well, Father Shane, what's so unique about this icon is that above them, kind of behind them, are images in the same icon of the resurrection of firefighters, first responders, police officers who died on 9/11, right?
Mm.
Awaiting
Lovely.
The resurrection, right?
Lovely.
So what was beautiful in that church, a couple things happened. I'd just been feeling this kind of growing patriotism of walking around New York City, riding the subway, seeing the Statue of Liberty, seeing Ellis Island, just recognizing my identity. And a true kind of patria was growing. That word patriotism, Father Shane, as you know, but for our listeners, it comes from a word that means love for homeland, love for fatherland. Patria means like pater, father. And that's where this, like, it's a good virtue to love where you're from, to like support your homeland and to have a real pride. Not kind of like a nationalism, but like a real, you know, patria, love for where you're from. But in this moment, I was able to take kind of that grief and that desire to bring it to God, which we did in a small moment of prayer, but to walk into that church and immediately kiss an icon, light a candle. But in that moment of seeing those images of firefighters, police officers, first responders in an icon of the resurrection, this kind of truer Christian patria started to kind of well up in me. And this recognition that, yes, I love being from the United States, you know, and I love that my family from Europe was able to come and to establish a life that I'm able to enjoy today. But my true homeland is in heaven. Just like those firefighters, like those police officers, whether they were Christian or not, their destiny is in heaven. And I've shared this a few times over this past week that I've been preaching in different schools in our diocese. And especially as we celebrate Lent right now, Father Shane, that insistence from the church that our true homeland is in heaven, and the especially that line from St. Therese of Lisieux that the world is thy ship, not thy home, it rang so true for me that, yes, I love my country. I don't want to see damage done to it. I want to see it flourish. But it points me somewhere, right? And true patriotism, a true love for my country, is a real love for my homeland, which is in heaven, right? And so that kind of stirring that I was feeling, it just found this kind of completion and recognizing that in that small Greek Orthodox church, yes, this is where I belong. You know, I belong in the church because the church is my home now and the church is my home in heaven. Yeah, I just love to hear if you have any thoughts on that. It was just very striking for me, and I've just been kind of sitting with that recently.
No, it's lovely. I mean, you've done a great job just kind of expounding on what your travels were like out there and how there was this progression of Statue of Liberty to Ground Zero at the 9/11 Memorial into this new sanctuary here on Earth of where worship is ordered towards our true patria, as you say. No, it's really lovely. I don't know that I've ever heard of an icon that actually includes, you know, as you say, like the firefighters and the police officers, you know, to, and maybe this is common in Eastern iconography that I'm not aware of, to include kind of contemporary figures along with more historical figures. Is that kind of a new thing?
It must be, because if the Orthodox and the, you know, the Eastern Christians do anything, it's uphold their traditions, you know?
Sure.
So I think that's why it was so shocking. I've not seen something like that before. I think that's why it was so, but it was interesting because it wasn't just a bunch of contemporary art. I mean, it was these traditional icons. But I think that's what was so striking for me is that it placed these contemporary people, real people with real faces, in the icon of the resurrection. You know,
right.
That was just as true for them that day on 9/11 as it is today, hopefully.
Yeah, what comes to mind is not only is that icon a living testimony of those who are grieving the loss of all the fallen victims, who are caught up in the mystery of eternal life that we recognize for through Jesus Christ. So that icon becomes kind of a consoling moment of grief, maybe a guiding, a beacon of hope for where grief ought to be ordered for all of those who lost loved ones there. Mm-hmm. But I also just wonder how much more evangelical, how much more of a capacity to evangelize lukewarm Christians or non-believing Christians, or people with no religious, you know, system at all, how evangelical that icon must be. Because if we were to take a survey of 1,000 people and say, walk into that Greek Orthodox church and go look at an icon of the resurrection, if it was just the icon, they might say, oh, well, even if we explain to them this is the resurrection and Jesus is bringing all of humanity with him going back, you know, emblematically to Adam and Eve, bringing all of that humanity with him into the gift of eternal life. Even if we were to explain that to them and then instead show them this icon that has the firefighters and the police officers and all the victims, and they say, oh, oh, this is what you Christians mean.
Right.
Like the people who died right out there in this very sacred ground, this hallowed ground where the two towers once stood, even they are caught up into this mystery that's being depicted here in the icon. This is what you Christians mean. Mm-hmm. Like it actually impacts how we live today with these ancient symbol of icons. I think that could be very evangelical for anyone walking in to see that.
Yeah, and I found it to be the case. There was a group of kind of tourists who walked in right before us. And, you know, it's interesting to watch people walk into a church if they're unchurched, let alone an Orthodox church, right? They're very unique, and most people, most Christians, especially in the U.S., haven't been to an Orthodox church before. But it was interesting, you know, the memorials of the wars in D.C. in the mall in D.C. there, they're beautiful and they're provocative. The Vietnam War Memorial, all those names on that kind of short wall. The Korean Memorial, the faces of different people etched in, and especially on that memorial, there's a few pictures of chaplains, of priests who were killed. And it's provocative, but there's something weird, something for a Christian anyways, for me as a priest. When I've been to D.C., it doesn't feel like there's anywhere to go with the kind of provocation, the question, it's just kind of a lot of things made of stone, you know? And like, thankfully on those pilgrimages, we end up going to the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in DC, but it's kind of far away. This was so unique because I walked immediately from this kind of state, you know, sanctioned memorial of this attack that happened. And I was immediately able to bring those feelings to into my Christian experience. And it just reminded me of how important sanctuaries are, right? Our churches. We don't often, sometimes in Spanish, they'll call like certain shrines, or they'll call certain churches within a city a temple, or they'll call it the sanctuary of St. Francis, the sanctuary of the Transfiguration, whatever it might be, in whatever city you're in, but they'll call it the santuario. And I think it's powerful. And we often just call our churches, but to recognize the importance of this like particular place where I can actually bring my humanity, I can bring my struggles, I can bring my difficulties, and there where heaven meets earth, within the context of the architecture, the beauty of the art, and within the liturgy itself especially, but even like the devotional aspects of lighting a candle, something very tangible, kissing an icon as Eastern Christians do, it was so helpful to remind me of why I'm Christian and why we do what we do, which I hope is evangelical for folks who go there. But I think for our listeners, as we wrap up here, just an experience of the church being our homeland and being a place where our kind of love for this earth and our love for heaven comes together, right? We have a great love for our parish churches. We have a great love for the places where we worship every Sunday. But to allow that place, familiarity often breeds some contempt, right? If we miss the beauty of our churches, the beauty of our architecture. But maybe this Sunday when you go to Mass, or whenever you go to Mass the next time, or you go to your church, to allow that to be kind of that touchstone, that place where you can bring your humanity and encounter God in his divinity and his humanity, right? That actually brings our humanity, like the resurrection, like that icon, up into God's own life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. Thanks for sharing. And I'm glad your travels out there became literally a walking pilgrimage, and praise God for this providential property owned by the Greek Orthodox that bring the cross to that beautiful shrine down there at 9/11's memorial. Thanks for sharing, Father. It's always good to be with you. Shane.
So we, of course, pray for those victims, and we'll pray for all of us. But in this time of Lent, let's especially pay attention to our homeland, which is in heaven.
Thanks for tuning in. Send your questions and comments to outcastcatholic@gmail.com. Catch you next time, and God bless.